This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Right, this is very much a kind of Q&A session, it's a panel session. I'm going to introduce the panel in a minute, and then I'm going to ask them just to say literally a few bullet points, and then we'll then go to the floor and then take some questions and comments and so on. And as I said, we've got just under half an hour. So the main theme of this discussion is engaging local business. We've got Kevin Hochter, who's Senior Policy Advisor at the British Chambers of Commerce, Paul Raines, Programme Director at the Local Government Association, Mike Sherry, Policy Chairman, Federation of Small Businesses, Alexandra Jones, who's recently joined as Chief Executive of the Centre for Cities, one of the supporters of this event today, and also Rodney Holmes, Chairman of the Mersey Partnership. So if I could just ask you, starting with Kevin, just a few key bullet points, just a few minutes, and then if you sort of go down the panel in turn, if you wouldn't mind.
The British Chambers of Commerce, I mean, we've been working quite closely at a national level with government on LEP bids, but also trying to work with chambers locally in order to develop the LEP bids as they're going forward. And I think from our perspective, we see that there are some really good bids that are out there. There have, however, been examples that chambers have said to us that they don't feel that necessarily all of the LEP bids are really kind of taking advantage of the opportunities that are there in terms of a real kind of enterprise agenda, in terms of business engagement, and in terms of really setting out a plan to generate and support the kind of level of private sector jobs and growth that we're going to need and that we've seen that we're going to need from yesterday's announcements. So I thought I'd just say three things about what we do want from LEPs and what we want to see from them going forward. I mean, I think the first point is that businesses in our membership, we've been pleasantly surprised at how many do want to get involved in this, considering, you know, some of the kind of attitudes that they've had previously about involved in this kind of thing. But it does mean that it's going to have to need to go beyond business as usual, I think. If we see this as becoming something where it's just day-to-day delivery or it's seen as a talking shop, then businesses are going to disengage and we're going to lose the kind of business, good businesses we want involved in this, and they're just going to vote with their feet and leave this kind of agenda. And partly that's about the kind of real business leadership of LEPs that we want to see. And I think that is, you know, a 50-50 partnership, a private sector chair, but it's also the real kind of dynamic and visionary business people being involved in this agenda and making it happen if it's going to succeed. And I think that is a new way we need to go in terms of taking these forward. And the final point would be, I think we need to learn from the pitfalls and things that haven't worked before if we're going to drive the kind of economic development we want to see. I think that means quite a narrow focus on economic outcomes. And we've spoken about the need for it to focus on, LEP bids to focus on local productivity, private sector wealth creation, and the kind of more diverse, sustainable local economy, and removing those kind of barriers to business growth that are out there. But a really clear purpose and direction as well. I think from our perspective, too much of the LEP discussion has been about processes and governance and not enough about exactly what they're there to do and having a clear kind of vision and plan as how to do that. And alongside that, there's got to be the way of measuring the tangible outcomes, which the Audit Commission have already spoken about as well. Really being able to say quite quickly, the LEP has got off the ground and it started to deliver some real outcomes that businesses that are taking part in it can see and that are measurable, and they can see that this is something that's going to work and that it's going to deliver. So I think there are three of the kind of things that we're really keen to see.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, good morning, everyone. The Federation of Small Businesses, as many of you will know, have been heavily involved in the formation of the bids where it's been possible to have that full engagement. And you must recognize that the Federation is the largest business organization truly representing the small, the micro businesses and the entrepreneurs. We have 184 branches across the whole of England. And the small and micro business sector is hugely important to the whole of our economy, and particularly our local communities and the local economies as well. 97% of all businesses fall into this category, and LEPs are likely to be very, very important to our local communities as we go forward, and we need to be recognizing the value that business and all business can bring to the table for you. If we look back at what came out in June from both CLG and BIS, then it was very, very explicitly laid out that the formation of any LEPs needed to be 50% business, 50% local authorities, and led by a well-respected chairman from the business sector. And FSB and BCC and other business organisations have genuinely tried to engage where we can, but that has been, in some areas, not well received, and it needs to be working far more effectively in others as we go forward. I think it's important, though, to recognise that government has said quite clearly that it doesn't welcome business organisations sitting at the table. And I think this is one thing that the Federation can actually offer to you. Not only are we an organisation, but we are an organisation that is member-led, truly member-led, because all of our members run their own businesses. And where we have the members who want to get engaged, they have the strategic vision, they have the desire to work with you to actually build the local economies for what we need to pull us out of the mess that we're currently in and to help you grow your local communities as we go forward.
Thank you very much. Paul.
Right, thank you. Paul Raines from the LGA. Anybody in the room who had the misfortune to be unemployed in the 1980s or the good fortune to be a student in the 1980s will remember a television programme called Going for Gold, which used to be on about lunchtime. And on that, a gentleman called Henry Kelly, who you may know with an engaging Irish accent, there's a question, it's a formulaic quiz show, and there was a formulaic question which came up in every episode in which Henry would turn to the contestant and he would say, "What am I?" before giving the person some clues. And it seems to me there are a lot of, well, 56 groups of people out there saying at the moment, "What am I?" in a range of different accents, and we've seen, you know, this morning the kind of different flavours that are coming through from different places. I wanted to talk just very briefly about the opportunity and sketch out the opportunity we've got, and then from that to draw some conclusions about the nature of the engagement between the state, organs of the state, local government, everything else, and business that this requires. And it seems to me that, you know, you've all seen on the newspapers this morning, there's George with his axe reshaping the state, maybe. And it's maybe. But look at some of the frontiers where he could be. We are almost certainly moving away from a world in which it is the job of the public sector to tell other people how it's going to be. You know, regional spatial strategies have gone, a whole swathe of inspection has gone. You know, we have had two people here today whose role a few years ago would have been conceived of as telling other people how it ought to be. That's gone. The subset of that, the civil service does not necessarily see it as its job anymore. This is a remarkable change to tell people how it should be. And for the LEP, which the civil service persistently described as the marshes in its submission to ministers a few weeks ago, you know, that has to be a good thing that those people are not telling it what to do. But there's also the point about money. It is not just that there will be less money. The money's going to be completely differently shaped. It's not that Train to Gain has gone. It's that skills funding will be demand-led. And whatever happens in skills, businesses are either going to have to pay for up front, or it will be quasi-voucherized and the funding will follow the learner. Similarly, the work program, it's going to be contracted on outcomes. Government is not going to do kind of planning that says the money's going to go over here and it's going to follow this priority. It's a much more economic model of where public sector money is going to go. And I would encourage you in a few days' time when that, and it's going to be called the local growth white paper rather than the subnational growth white paper, when that comes out, have a look at what it says about taxation and taxation on business. But you may, if you're very clever with numbers, you will have worked out that in the fourth year of yesterday's spending review, the grant to local government that comes from business rate, the number that's shown, is less than the product of the business rate is going to be in that year. What are they going to do with the rest? Might find out a few hints on that next week. And we've heard the Prime Minister already say that he wants to see the business rate used to incentivise growth in the tourism industry. So, you know, we may see a completely different shape in what public money is for, and it may be more closely linked to growth, which is very, very interesting. What does that say for the nature of the conversation between us? It says that the quality of the conversation between us is just going up and up and up as this LEP process goes on.
And it is entirely true there are a lot of people, and I can think of other business organisations that would be significantly more questioning than we've already had. There are a lot of people in the business world who are saying, what is this all about? But at the same time, I'm looking at Martin over there, you know, we've had a series of conversations in Local Government House about skills, about how the work programme will work, in which business and providers and local government are coming together with an intensity we've not seen before. So it's more than about 50-50 on boards. If you look at, you know, what John Lowther was saying about the Tees Valley Partnership, that's been going for 15 years. What's been going on in the Black Country, you know, the board there, joint private-public board, has been around for a very long time. They've worked a lot together as people to learn about each other as people. And you do learn things. I mean, one of my great stories was when the public sector in Essex, where I worked, was absolutely determined to increase business survival, which we've heard mentioned as a metric. Actually, business people wound up coming to us and saying, you don't understand, the survival rate of businesses in Essex is partly linked to our behaviour in order to deal with the tax authorities. So please don't ask us to survive for longer than 2 years. Those conversations are really going to take off. And that's the space we need to get into. This is somewhere where business is not being brought to the table to play at being in the public sector. This is somewhere where the public sector is now going to have to start to learn where growth actually comes from and who makes it happen.
Thank you, Paul. Hello, go on.
Great. Well, I'm not going to repeat some of the comments that have already been made. We see local enterprise partnerships as an opportunity to really focus on growth and private sector-led growth at a time when we desperately need that. Growth is not going to come from the public sector anymore, and we know that. And actually, because local enterprise partnerships are at the level of the real economy, so the economy that you and I would recognise because we travel within it, whether it's to work or to leisure, I think there is a real opportunity to act on some of the things that businesses say they want acted upon. And that's not necessarily the really attractive, kind of sexy things. It's often planning, transport, housing, really making progress on those. And being able to do it at the level of the real economy is a real opportunity. What I'd like to focus on is at the Centre for Cities, which, for those of you who don't know, is the only think tank dedicated to understanding and improving city economies. And I would think about city economies as very much being about the urban area and the neighbouring, often rural, communities. We've done a great deal to look at, well, what's the opportunity for local enterprise partnerships? What will businesses want? And what are the challenges? And I'd say there are about four key challenges that local enterprise partnerships need to rise to get to that much more mature relationship that Paul and others were talking about. And one of them is demonstrating that you know what you're going to be doing in the local enterprise partnership and you know what you're not going to be doing. A clear focus about what you're trying to achieve. I thought that John Lowther's comments earlier about stopping doing tourism because you just don't have the money illustrates that very well. A lot of the local enterprise partnership bids are relatively clear about what they're doing. Some are less clear. They're trying to do everything. They look very much like some of the previous multi-area agreements. So actually being really clear, what can we do? What's the role of the public sector? And how do we work differently with the private sector? This is not about more of the same. This is about a different relationship. So absolute clarity about what you're trying to do, first point. Second point, I think there needs to be a demonstration that you can make difficult decisions. And that will be about priorities, and that will be very politically unpopular. It will be very challenging. It will be about deciding to do things if you're working across the real economy. You'll do some things in one area and not in another because you think that's the way to generate growth, to generate jobs. There will be difficult decisions, but unless those can be made and business sees it, they won't engage with local enterprise partnerships in that partnership way that I think we need to move to. The third issue is working across boundaries on at different levels. So transport, that's the level of the real economy. There'll be some things that should be done more locally. There'll be some things that may involve local enterprise partnerships working together. For example, European funding in Yorkshire, they're talking about working together. I think the key is for some areas, local enterprise partnerships have been feared because there's an assumption that you have to do everything at that level. We don't think that's the case. It needs to focus on what it is doing. You need to be able to work across boundaries because actually often that's what makes sense to business. But you also need to be able to work out what you just do locally because it's best value. If it's not going to be more efficient and if it's not going to improve the local economy, then why are you doing it? I think is a big question. And finally, I think it's just about recognising how you work with businesses. Businesses, one, don't have one voice, and I think that's illustrated by the fact there's two business representatives at the table. There's not one voice from businesses, there are many voices. They're not in this to deliver what you're in this for. They're in this to, they're running a business. They're there to make a profit and do really well. So you need to show to them why would they engage, how you're going to make progress, what you're going to achieve. And you need to recognise how you bring businesses in. So they're not there to run the whole thing, not there to be the public sector, but you're making really good use of their skills and their expertise and their knowledge of the local area to really generate what local enterprise partnerships have to be about. And that's new private sector jobs for the people in the area and nearby.
Thank you very much. And Rod Holmes.
Thank you, Chair. Well, the past 24 hours has been nowhere near as bad as it could have been. Some very positive news came out of yesterday afternoon, I think. Continuing support for the highest value scientific research, protection for science and key elements of adult skills funding, higher education innovation, support for manufacturing, especially high growth companies, continuation of the Enterprise Finance Guarantee Scheme, and so on. And this morning we've heard, I think, if I may say so, Chair, some very inspiring contributions. Ian Rigglesworth, Sir Ian, reminded us that he's learnt over the years that it is not infrastructure, it is not building offices that create regeneration. Above all, it is aspiration and ambition. Jane Ashley, I thought, made a very important point. Language. Language is a huge barrier between the public and private sectors. Many of us in the private sector are put off by public sector jargon. John Lowther suggested that we look at the Netherlands, Germany, and Singapore for other ways of financing projects. Good for him. Alison Scott, not about finance. LEPs are about creating thinking regarding creative thinking about powers. Powers, very important. And then we heard from Richard, who said this is an opportunity to decide what we want to count. Very interesting. And Roger Turner reminded us that 20% of our national output comes from the rural economy, which takes us back to Sir Ian, who said that that he isn't going to be starstruck by the cities. That's the one issue that I have disagreed with him before on. I think we have to be starstruck about our great cities. The handful of big conurbations which are going to drive us out of recession and into sustainable growth. And there will be just four or five major conurbations which are going to lead that growth. And we shouldn't forget it. We haven't heard much about the mechanisms for growth during the past 24 hours for wealth creation, job creation. What is the mechanism for bringing that about? With depleted public resources for business support, what are those mechanisms for growing our economy, particularly growing our manufacturing industries and our exportable services to sell abroad, and to do so with a sense of urgency in against global competition? I carry with me every day of my life now a single sheet of paper which lists 10 of the things, the mechanisms. I'm not going to read them all to you, but there are simple mechanisms that we should be focusing on now, moving on from the governance debate. We've got to move into how we bring growth about. And it's not rocket science, creating a good business environment, exploiting opportunities to innovate, working more closely with universities, colleges, and specialist in centres, creating awareness amongst potential customers, inward investment into our regions, hugely important, especially in Merseyside, where I'm working, because we desperately need more and more business activity in Liverpool City region, assisting existing and incoming businesses to build up local supply chains, articulating private sector needs, and so on. Those are the subjects which are now preoccupying us as we move forward with the Liverpool City region. LEP, we've put our proposal in. For some 2 or 3 years now, we've been working at a city region level, politically and in the private sector. We've moved on now to identifying those parts of our economy which offer real opportunities for growth, and we're drilling down into those sectors to see what are the specific opportunities, and we're focusing on them to make the step changes that are the only things which can bring about a step change in overall growth. Our biggest challenge is, and we've heard some useful comments in the past few minutes, our biggest challenge is to engage business leaders at the right level who are prepared to put in the time, the energy, the insight into our LEP and to maintain their interest and not scare them off by public sector speak and by the feeling that they are immersed in a talking shop. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Now, let's take a few comments and questions from the floor. So we've got a question there. If you could just say who you were, and we'll take Bill there. Bill, next. We'll take a batch together.
Douglas Robertson, Newcastle University. When we had the discussion, several discussions in the Northeast on several LEPs, being a university, we were approached by several local authorities during the conversations. The business leaders that I was talking to were making it very clear that they understood part of the rationale of the LEPs, but actually a whole lot of it had nothing to do with them. They had an interest as a citizen in those issues, but not as a business. And the other issue that came up was conflicts of interest. If you put LEPs and give them some responsibility for housing, and your business leader is the chairman of a housing company, that's a pretty massive conflict, particularly when they're accessing public money to advance private benefit. And they didn't really understand how those issues were going to be resolved.
Thank you. You pass it. Thank you.
Bill Murphy, interim director at East Sussex County Council. I mean, two kind of conflicting thoughts, really. One is the underlying assumption appears to be that public sector expenditure has been stifling private sector growth, and therefore we need to sort of, you know, there's going to be less public sector investment, and that should create space for private sector growth. As someone who kind of lives in the Docklands, worked in London a lot of my life, and now sort of, you know, exploring life outside of London, I don't really see much evidence of regeneration that's taking place without quite significant private sector investment, frankly. And, you know, what is the evidence base to say that the public sector has in some way been stifling enterprise and that we now have a new mechanism that somehow is going to release a massive enterprise that wasn't there before? I'm just interested what the evidence base is. I really, really hope it is. But I don't really understand what it is that the public sector is doing in places like Eastbourne or Hastings, where I'm now working, that's actually stopping people investing and borrowing. It feels to me that's more a function of the system of the sort of financial risk people are willing to take in the current economic climate.
Thank you. Any other points or questions at this stage? Okay. We've got an online question, actually, because it is being filmed online. The question asked about what the panel... what are their views on including the third sector, social enterprises, and the wider voluntary sector in the LEP discussion? So there's three questions there for you. Who wants to kick off? Paul.
Can I? Sorry.
Go there.
Well, only because at my age it's important not to forget. I think it was it Councillor Robertson? This question, people say, well, the LEPs haven't, private sector people have said to me, well, but surely this LEP is going to be dealing with a lot of things that don't really bother me. I think if it's something that doesn't affect economic growth, then it's not relevant. That is how I interpret local enterprise partnership. And I think if you read, go back to the end of June letter that we got from the two ministers, I think actually it was pretty plain, but not particularly well written, because it did leave that ambiguity when it talked about housing and planning and other things. I think I read it to imply that to the extent that housing development and infrastructure, transport, planning and things, to the extent to which they impinge upon economic growth, they are relevant, but only to that extent. That's how I understood it. Bill Murphy, about the public sector being stifled by the private sector. Sorry? Right, yes. No, it's different. Well, I probably still got it wrong, but so I shall answer a different question, which is which is, I think that's in the, let me go back to the development agency days. The Northwest Development Agency, rightly, is congratulated on doing what it was asked to do very well indeed. But it certainly did encourage the culture of handouts, of funding, and of telling people what they could and could not do. And if to the extent that the new environment is encouraging us away from those two things, then I can understand why the development agencies are being disbanded. Maybe they will, as I think up in the Northwest, some form of regional organisation governance working together is emerging and is inevitable. But the dismantling, to start with, of development agencies, I think is a positive move. It will, I think, invigorate and change the perceptions of the private sector, and we've heard today that's the thing that it's all about, that shift away from public sector leadership to private sector leadership.
Thank you. These are very big questions, and I'm conscious that as a salaried officer in a politically led organisation, I need to studiously avoid saying anything that might be controversial. But I will come on to Bill's point about the public-private evidence base. But I wanted to start with this point about the relevance to business. And I want to make a point that I have heard Kevin's boss make many times, David Frost of the Chambers of Commerce, who is extremely good at characterising business leaders as leaders within their community. And one of the things, I encourage you to go down the road to Chamberlain Square and look at the statue of, is it Joe or is it Neville? I can't remember which one. Joe. And the one of the current members of Parliament for this city says that he grew up as a little boy in a place where he thought it was normal for his councillor to own the bank. You know, and that's a kind of convergence of civic leadership that we have lost. And actually, all of this gives us an opportunity to regain. But that does require a leap of imagination on all sides. Secondly, the point about public-private. There are two things. Firstly, no, there are three, actually. The first is simply we do have an enormous deficit. And there are you can get into crowding out arguments at various points in the economic cycle. We are definitely at a point where the scale of the public sector is such that it is inhibiting growth and something needs to be done about it. That's point one. And that, I think, is not controversial. Secondly, there is a point about how public money gets allocated. And I don't want to be completely specific and name names because places and individual businesses get cross, but there's a lot of evidence, some of it knocking around in the centre of cities at the moment, which shows that the public sector does have a habit of spending money on stuff that produces a negative economic return. And, you know, there are some sectors of the economy, one very, very big industry that's been very much in the public debate over the last week or so, which produces a negative economic return to society, and politicians push public money into it for reasons which are not to do with growth, but are to do with political management and individual constituencies. So, you know, there is some evidence on the public versus private.
What interest was that, by the way?
I'm going to avoid controversy by not naming it, but I'm sure anybody who lives in South Wales or Scotland or Portsmouth at the moment will be able to work out which one I'm thinking of. There's one further point which comes back to, you know, and again, I don't want to say anything controversial about the regional development agencies, but it is the fact that before the RDA model came in, public money levered in more co-investment from the private sector and other sectors than it has done for the last 10 years. And actually, that's one of the things that the Regional Growth Fund will give us, is the opportunity to focus on leverage once again as a key metric around how we use public money. On the last thing, there is a really important role for the third sector in all this, and in particular, social enterprises. And one of the really, really interesting things is the way in which we're going through a phase now, and it's not just to do with LEPs, where councils and others in the public sector are really going to look at their procurement practices and their commissioning to make sure that the space is there for social enterprises. But also there's just a growing awareness right across the board that social enterprises, you know, the emphasis is on the word enterprise rather than on the social bit. And what they do you know, is find innovative and exciting ways to do stuff better in competitive markets in precisely the way that profit distributing companies do too. And that's worth taking on board as we think about social enterprise.
Alex?
Yes, just briefly on the business point. I mean, I think there is, one of the things the Centre has been saying is there is an issue about how you construct local enterprise partnerships and think about the roles of businesses, because there is potential for conflicts of interest. I know lots of local enterprise partnerships, because we're speaking to them, are thinking about this. How do you deal with the legal issues? How do you deal with ensuring they're democratically accountable? The answers aren't going to come from government, because that's not what this government's about. So actually, I just encourage people to talk to each other, talk about the emerging models. I think they'll become clearer over the next few weeks and months about how these things are going to operate. On the public sector and the kind of crowding out point, I mean, the evidence is often quite mixed about crowding out, but I think there is there has been an issue about spending on things that haven't been about demand-led. So to give you an example, there's been an awful lot of creative industries buildings built. And I know of one in London where they built it. They didn't actually talk to the creative industries businesses, but they built it. And for any of you who knows anything about the creative industries, you'll know that one of the best ways to get business is not in your office doing fantastically whizzy things on your computer. It's over a coffee in the cafe where you meet everybody else, you hear about the bids that are out there, and you join together and you do business. And this was a creative industries specific building without a cafe. And all of these creative industry businesses, when they were offered this beautiful, shiny, wonderful building, said, thank you ever so much. If you'd spoken to us, we'd have told you. And no, thank you. And there are places across the UK that are empty, places that have been built in areas on the philosophy of build it and they'll come. And that's not that's not the best way to use funds. So I would argue that this is about thinking about how you use much more limited public sector investment in different ways. This is about trying to, because there's going to be no more public sector job growth, and two-thirds of job growth in the last decade was in education, health, and public administration. We're not in that world anymore. So I'm not going to get into the crowding out argument. I think the evidence is mixed on that. But given where we are, I think it was really important for the public sector to work out what does it do, what's its role, where can it have most impact. And that means talking to businesses, but also shaping demand. It's not just about being demand-led. It's about shaping that demand. It's about that kind of partnership. This isn't public bad, private good. I think that will be a priority, working out where can you put very limited funds that will unlock private sector investment. And how do you think about places that link? You know, the UK is very small, so how do you think about making the most of its connections between places to make sure there's growth in jobs across the country?
What about the third sector? That's quite the last question.
Oh, I mean, absolutely, it's key. It's a really important element of communities and of places. So, I mean, it's incredibly important.
We haven't, dare I say, mentioned the words big society yet today, but, I mean, how much is social enterprise going to be a key driver of jobs growth?
That's a really challenging question. I mean, it's quite difficult to predict where the jobs growth will come from, and I think just one thing briefly on that. Jobs growth often gets confused with economic growth. There are certain sectors where jobs have grown. In recent years, business services, for example, have been a very important source of jobs growth. Financial services, less so, but an important source of productivity before a minor event you may have noticed. So there are differences. So I think, first thing, it's important to differentiate between jobs growth and economic growth. Some of the sectors that keep getting talked about, and I can say this, like low-carbon economy, like creative industries, incredibly important, will not necessarily generate lots of jobs. Really important for productivity, and you need to disengage the two. Now, within those sectors and within many other sectors, the third sector, social enterprise, will be really important because the public sector is being encouraged to push money out, to engage differently with communities. I think it will be an important part of the big society. But I think we need to think about there's jobs growth, there's economic growth, and there's places and shaping places and thinking about how communities work. And I think it's just important to think about how these three fit together. Social enterprise will be an important source of jobs growth, I've got no doubt. Whether we should be saying that it will be responsible for all of it, I'm not so sure. I think we just need to think about what role can it play in stepping up, being very innovative locally in delivering services. But they're quite small. So I think it's not relying on them for all the jobs growth, but thinking what can they do and how do we just create the space for them to thrive and set up and do things differently.
Okay, thanks. For the last three.
If I can just touch on the very letters, LEP. It stands for Local Enterprise Partnerships, underpinning economic growth in our local communities. And to be quite honest, that is all that matters now to pull us out of the mess that we're in, to pull us out of the recession that we're in. So it is local enterprise, it is stimulating growth, and quite honestly, what we had from the CSR yesterday was nothing about how we're going to stimulate growth for small businesses, which are going to be the drivers of the jobs that we need to be creating and the increase in our economies locally and nationally. If I can just come on to the conflict of interest, the Federation, as you may or may not be aware, has the ability to put forward members who are genuinely, I hope, capable and competent to deliver on the agenda that we need to take LEPs forward. If that is not the case, and I know that the Chambers have worked very hard with us in certain places, particularly here in the West Midlands with the Warwickshire and Coventry bid, as well as with the Birmingham and Solihull bid. But you also in the West Midlands have something fairly unique, which is the Business Voice West Midlands group of the 25 regional business organisations who actually have an elective mechanism there to put forward the most appropriate person from whatever business group they represent between them all to sit on the enterprise partnership, the regional skills partnerships, the regional assemblies, whatever public sector grouping there may be out there that needs to be engaged with. If I can just come on to the question about public sector stifling private sector growth, I think we need to just get back and step back a moment. We have the biggest deficit that we have ever known in this country, and all the business groups are unanimous in agreeing that that has to be tackled. And I think what you need to be looking at, again, is that we need to be demand-led and we need to be creating the circumstances where all businesses can grow to move our economies forward. As to third sector and wider voluntary sector involvement, I have a wry smile there. I can't help remembering what we actually achieved here in the West Midlands and in other areas with the regional assemblies. I'm not for 1 minute suggesting we go back to that, but you know, it does raise a question as to whether or not they can be involved, and I think quite genuinely they can be. But take a step back to what I said earlier about the letter that came out from both Pickles and Cable, CLG and Biz, that it was going to be business and it was going to be local authorities. And I think then there is certainly a role for the third sector and the voluntary sector to be added on to that where it is required to come in and help deliver on its particular agenda, which is going to be very, very valuable to us all as we take forward this so-called big society.
Okay, thanks. And finally, Kevin.
Yeah, I think I'd echo Paul's point, which he's quoted my boss in saying, so I think I should. The message that we get from our members very much is that they care about their local economy, and we think that there is a need to restore the level of trust between businesses and local authorities that there did used to be, which we seem to have lost. On the kind of conflict of interest point, I mean, I don't think it's really beyond us to be able to work out ways to make this to work that doesn't create those. I know from the example of many chambers who deliver services, they've taken a view that they don't want to sit on the board if they're involved in delivery. I don't really think, you know, we can't really get beyond that. I think that's quite dealable with. On the kind of public-private sector point, I mean, it's kind of a moot point, isn't it, really? There isn't going to be much more public sector investment, so we do need more private sector and more jobs. So let's just get on with that, really. I don't really know what we can gain from that debate. And on the final point, I think I'd echo what Mike's just said about there's a danger that people are associating the fact that if they don't have a seat on the board of the LEP, that doesn't mean they don't have influence, it doesn't mean they don't have input into what's happening. And the problem, quite frankly, with some of the mechanisms that we had before, that we have now still, is that the private sector is one voice on a table of enormous amount of other organisations, and therefore there's a real risk that you lose the economic focus and you lose the business voice in the wealth of other very important issues that there are, which local authorities do have to deal with. But because local authorities have to deal with them, that doesn't mean they're things that LEPs have to deal with. They are there to deal with enterprise and economic issues, and that's why on the board it's a business and local authority partnership, and all the other sectors should be involved and input, but that doesn't mean they all need to sit on the board.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. I think we better wrap up there. We've slightly run into lunch here. I've got about 50 minutes for lunch, just under, so if we could
get back here for 2:15. I'd like to thank the panel, Kevin, Paul, Mike, Alex and Rod, very much. Thank you.